und herzlich willkommen zum New Work Chat Podcast. Ich bin Gabriel und ich grüße euch aus dem wunderschönen Rostock an der Ostsee, wo ich mit meiner Frau und unseren drei kleinen Töchtern lebe und arbeite. Apropos, um das Thema Arbeit soll es hier im Podcast natürlich gehen, verbunden mit der Frage, wie wollen wir eigentlich unser Leben auf diesem blauen Planeten gestalten? Dazu hole ich mir spannende Köpfe vor das Mikro und frage sie nach ihren größten Learnings und ihren persönlichen Challenges auf dem Weg zu dem, was sie heute tun. Wir reden über vernetztes Arbeiten und disruptives Denken in Zeiten der Digitalisierung, über kulturellen Wandel und über die Frage, wie wir unsere Arbeit mit unserer Familie vereinbaren. Das interessiert mich als Vater von drei Kindern natürlich ganz besonders und da bin ich dankbar für jeden Impuls. Ich selber bin Digitalstratege, blogge seit mehr als 10 Jahren über mein Leben zwischen Daddy-Modus und Digital Life, bin außerdem Teil der 12 Minutes Me Crew und stehe hin und wieder als Rapper auf der Bühne. Ich wünsche euch ganz viel Spaß, lasst mich wissen, wie es euch gefällt. Feedback ist immer willkommen. Viele Grüße, viel Spaß und leinen los. Und wir springen auch direkt rein in Folge Nummer 4 des New Work Chat mit Isabelle de Klerk aus Belgien. Isabelle ist eine der führenden Expertinnen in Europa rund um das Thema Digital Workplace und Social Collaboration. Sie beschäftigt sich mit ihrem Unternehmen Connect, Share and Lead mit der Frage, wie kann man eigentlich Organisationen zu einer neuen Lernkultur helfen und wie kann man eigentlich auch Menschen und Mitarbeiter dazu befähigen, sich zu vernetzen mit digitalen Tools. Sie ist mit diesem Thema auch auf Bühnen unterwegs, hält Vorträge und sie hat eben auch das Buch Vernetzt Arbeiten geschrieben, das ich euch sehr empfehlen kann. Daran haben einige Experten mitgearbeitet, unter anderem auch Ragnar Heil, den ich hier im New Work Chat ja bereits interviewt habe. Hier kommt das Interview mit Isabelle. Ich habe in meinem allerbesten Schulenglisch gekämpft und habe wieder mal festgestellt, Lernen, Lernen, Lernen findet auf verschiedenen Ebenen statt. Es bringt nichts, sich zurückzulehnen. Insofern viel Spaß damit und bis bald.
Yes, okay. We're back at New Work Chat number 4. And I'm very happy to have Isabelle de Klerk as a guest here from Belgium, Antwerpen. Hello to you from Rostock.
Yeah, with pleasure. Yeah, with pleasure. Nice to meet you, Gabriel.
How are you, Isabelle?
I'm doing fine. One of the reasons is that it is just February and yesterday in Antwerp we had 20 degrees. So it felt a bit like spring. Yeah. And I had a nice workshop this afternoon, so everything is going fine. Thank you.
It's like a summer in northern Germany.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Yeah.
Isabelle, you are known in the scene of people who deal with the topic of digital workplace, digital transformation. You wrote a lot. You have a podcast and you have a new book, and we will talk about this. But I would like to start with a question about you. Please introduce yourself. Who are you and what do you do?
Yeah. So my name is Isabelle de Klerk. I work in Antwerp in Belgium. And in fact, what I do is, I think I would like to refer to the subtitle of my book. And so this is my book. It's the original title, Social Technologies in Business. And the subtitle is Connect, Share, Lead. And so in fact, what I do is I help individuals to connect with the right persons online. I help them to share their knowledge, and not just their own knowledge, but also knowledge from other people. And so in the end, they lead. So it's connect, share, lead for individuals because they become lifelong learners, and for organizations because they become more connected. It means that they become more agile, more productive, and more efficient, and even more connected with the customer. And I really like this topic of social technologies because a lot of topics that I like come together in social technologies. It's about language. Language allows us to connect with people, to tell stories, to develop ourselves. It's about technology and it's about leadership and self-leadership. So that's who I am and what I like to do in my professional life.
It was the first book that I read this year. And I really liked it, and I'm interested in or you wanted to write a book, like old-fashioned style?
Old-fashioned, yes. Yes, it is. Yeah.
Why a book, and how did you do it with the guest authors in it?
Yeah, I have to admit that at the start, I didn't want to write a book. I wanted to make an ebook. And then when I was working on the content, I thought at a certain moment, it should be a book. You have to know, Gabriel, that I really like books. My house is full of books and my children don't read books. I don't understand, but that's another story. And since I was a child, I was always reading. And so on Saturday, I went to the library. And, you know, I choose 4 or 5 books. And then the next week I was there back. So I've always loved reading books. So I like also the taste, the smell of the paper and that you can touch the paper. Mm-hmm. And what I also like with books is that you can write your thoughts on the paper in the margins. And it's called marginalia. And so these marginalia are like a kind of a conversation between the writer and the reader. And that, I think, you know, this physical contact with the pages of the book is something that you don't have with an ebook. So that is one of the reasons that I really wanted this old-fashioned book. And what I also like is that, so I invite people to write things down in the book, and then they send me pictures. So readers send me pictures from all around the world to show what are their thoughts about some pages and some paragraphs. And so by these co-authors, you have to know that a lot of them, I have found them on social media. For example, there is Rita Zonius from Australia. I met her on Twitter. And then there is Ragnar Hall from Germany. I met him on Facebook. And then there was an Indian guy, but his chapter didn't make it to the book. I found him on LinkedIn. So in fact, social media allowed me to meet a lot of people, really inspiring people. Isn't that the power of social technologies?
Mm-hmm. So how did you build your network?
Yeah, that's a good question. I started with Twitter, I think, in 2011. And I really liked Twitter. And then there was LinkedIn, and then there was Facebook. And if I give advice to people to build up a network, I like to refer to what I call my 3C model. And the 3C model is like this. It's about consuming, contributing, and creating. You don't start with creating, you start with consuming. But already consuming is really, it is worth a lot. But there I ask people the following question. What is this one topic that you really are passionate about, that you really want to learn about a lot? So if you start looking for people to follow, I think that your search should be well directed and should be very conscious. So it starts with self-directed learning. What is the topic that I really want to learn about more? And only then you pass through the second C, which is contributing. And contributing, I think there is a lot of magic that happens over there, because it means that you take the knowledge of somebody else, and then you share it in your network, but you add a layer of information. And it's like, you know, you work with the knowledge of somebody else. And then in the third stage, you go to creating. And there I tell people that, well, first of all, they should find their digital voice. Also, for some people, it's text. But for other people, it's more visuals or video or podcasts. And then what I also learned is that you should not just post information, but you should also ask questions. And you should go in what I call reflective practice. A reflective practice is thinking about what you have learned after a project or at the end of the day. So just don't stick to information, but ask questions and share really your knowledge. And there it becomes very interesting. So that's what I call my 3 C's, consuming, contributing, creating. And then I would like to have 3 G's too, but I only have one. I only have 2 of them. The first G is about generosity. The knowledge that you give online, you should do it in a very generous way. So it's about generosity. And the second thing is that I think sharing your knowledge is about giving a gift to yourself. Because before you can share your knowledge, you have to take the time to reflect. And taking the time to reflect is like giving a present to yourself. Mm-hmm. I'm looking for the third G, but I have not found it yet. So generosity and a gift to yourself.
That's like blogging. I have my own blog for some years now. And every time I blog about a topic, I learn a lot. Reading a lot and thinking about it. And at the end, I always ask the question, and it's very interesting to have an interview with the readers then.
Yeah, yeah.
So, contributing is like learning then.
Yeah, contributing, yes, indeed, with your own knowledge. And what I also find very magical is that the moment that you translate your thoughts into something tangible in text, it helps you to sharpen your thoughts. It sharpens your mind. And that is something magical indeed.
So building communities, networking is also one thing you describe and your co-authors in your book that is important for companies to evolve. And that's what we try to do here at Ostseesparkasse Rostock, where I work. Of course, there are networks in a company and in our company, but what we try to do is build like an online community or several communities within our enterprise social network that we have for, I think, 4 years now. But it's new for the people to connect online for a lot of them. So it's not in the culture to do it like online. So they would like to go to the office and talk to them, or maybe call them, write an email. So it's new for them to connect there. And what do you think as companies, how can we build these communities online? How can we change the culture, maybe?
Yeah. There is not some magic recipe for that, because it takes time. But first of all, I think that we should acknowledge, we should accept that it is a huge change for a lot of people. And so the question that I found really intriguing is, so what kind of belief or mindset do we have to have before we start participating in communities? And I think one of these beliefs is that you go from an isolated expert towards a member of a community. And that is something that is really new. Another thing is that before, it was about I know it all. And now we have to go to I learn it all. Because, before, the answers to the questions were already given, and it was about being more productive and more efficient, but always on the same topics, solving the same problems. But now it's about new things, and we should understand that now sometimes ideas, they emerge from conversations and dialogues. And all of that is really new for people. So first of all, we should understand that it is a huge change for a lot of people. And then the second question is, how can we go through that change? And, when we talk about change, there are always the same building blocks that come back. And so one of these building blocks is that the organizational why, the why from Simon Sinek, it should be very clear. And I have seen beautiful examples at Engie, for example. It's an energy provider worldwide. And it was a beautiful example because there the why was the expertise, the technical expertise was geographically spread. And people, in fact, needed to connect with each other across geographical boundaries in order to be able to do their work. So there it was very clear. I also see a very clear organizational why at Daimler, for example, where they say that social collaboration is all about digital transformation. I explained that. Digital transformation is about getting closer to customers. But of course, if you do that in silos, then you're not giving a good answer to the need of the customer. So what you need is breaking down silos. So what you need is knowledge sharing. But then in other companies, like, for example, at Evonik, they didn't have the organizational why from the beginning, but it still is a success. So, yeah, there's not, you know, like one answer. So there is this organizational why. And then the second thing is, of course, the organizational why is not enough to convince people. It is very important that we translate this organizational why into advantages for the individual. Mm-hmm. And what I see there is that sometimes people say you will have easier access to people, you will have easier access to the right version of the documents. And that is something that people understand. But I think the true reason for social technologies and knowledge sharing is about lifelong learning and self-directed learning. That's really an advantage for the individual. But the problem is, it is a rather, how do you say that, philosophical topic. Mm-hmm. And so it's not easy to convince people about that. And then, of course, there is this building block of the executive engagements, so that executives and managers should set the example. Mm-hmm. But there, I think we should also understand that for executives and managers, it is very difficult to participate in online communities, because before, they were used to be the persons who had all the power.
Yes.
And now you ask them to be vulnerable. Well, that's quite a change. Or before, they had a lot of power because they decided who was going to get which information. And now we tell them that all the information should be transparent. And before, they got, you know, all the answers to all the questions, and they decided who was going to get which training. And now people find answers to their questions themselves in their online communities. So that's a huge change. Yes. For managers and executives. And so we should understand and acknowledge the change for these people. And then another building block is, of course, training for employees, managers, and executives. Because, you know, sharing your knowledge in a proactive way, it requires a new mindset, and it's a new skill. So people need time and help. And it's not because we are posting on Facebook or posting on Instagram that we know how to ask questions to our online communities and to go into what I've called reflective practice. It is new. So people need training and time. So I think, you know, these building blocks, I think about organizational why, advantages for the individual, executive engagement and training. Mm. And even then, it will take a lot of time.
Yes, indeed.
It's a huge change. Yeah, and we should be honest about that too.
So what we have here is like a group of colleagues who meet and talk about new ideas to develop this mindset and to develop the communities here for new ideas and methods. But we always talk about the fear that a lot of people have, fear of working transparently, because then everybody can see maybe what you do is not right or is not good, not good enough or whatever, and people will criticize you. What do you say? How can we help them? Maybe not to change the mindset, but to be brave and not focus on fear.
I think the concept of psychological safety is a very important one. If people don't feel safe, then they will not share their knowledge in transparency. And of course, the question is, where does this fear come from? I think it comes from former reactions of managers, because if people are not allowed to make mistakes, well, then they will not share their knowledge, because it could be seen as very dangerous. So I think that the role of the managers is very important, you know, to install this context of trust. Mm. But also, I think employees giving feedback to each other. And so, you know, I was, you know, with your other question, I was trying to explain the change. And I was talking about before, we were always doing the same thing, but more rapidly, you know, faster. Mm. Now people should understand that some things are new and that solutions are not given yet, and that they have to be constructed in shared understanding and in dialogue. Mm. And then, of course, we make mistakes because the solution is not ready there. But it is completely new. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it will take a lot of time to work on the psychological safety. I think psychological safety is a very important concept. Yeah.
We are talking a lot about the digital workplace. See it on agendas of conferences.
Yeah.
And it's like a buzzword now. How do you understand it?
Yeah, I have to say that this summer, I tried to make a definition of the digital workplace, and I've printed it out. I'm going to read it to you. Okay. I would like to have your feedback. So here goes the definition. Because of the rise of technology, we see that the physical workplace, the office, is complemented by another kind of workplace, the digital one. So there, the important element is that there is a digital workplace, but there is still a physical one. You have the two of them. We should not forget about the physical workplace either. Thanks to mobile applications, tools in the clouds, the workforce is able to work anytime, anywhere, from any device. This flexibility in time and location might seem trivial at first sight, but it is not. The introduction of the digital tools introduce new ways of working. It's about increased transparency, it's the word that you used. It's about intensified connectedness across all boundaries, geographical boundaries and hierarchical ones. And now it comes, and I think you used the same word too. The digital workplace unlocks things that were hidden before in the physical workplace. Documents, they were hidden in emails. Talents, you know, they were kind of hidden in the office. And knowledge was hidden in the head of people. And now it has been unlocked. It becomes more transparent. And again, this increased transparency and connectedness across all boundaries might seem trivial at first sight, but it is not. And there it comes. The digital tools are a vital catalyst for organizational change. In fact, we could say they propel the shift from organization-centric and inward-looking thinking to customer and employee-centric thinking. And that's a huge shift for both employees and leaders. So that's what I call it, you know, the definition of the digital workplace. And what I like most in it is, in fact, the second part, where I say that things that used to be hidden are become more transparent, are unlocked now, like talents, information, documents. That is what I like about digital workplace, more transparency, more visibility. Yeah.
So do you think like a democratic?
Yes, democratization, yes, indeed. And also it has a kind of a liberating effect. The fact that we don't have to go to the office to work, but that we can do it from anywhere, anytime, any device. Yeah, indeed.
And then there are a lot of people who say, I'm working at the digital workplace for some years now. I use email.
yeah. But it is, yeah, it's true. It's true. And then also when I try to explain digital workplace in general, I refer to the workplace of the 80s, because in the 80s we didn't have email yet. But then you have a lot of people in the room who were just born in the 90s. So it's very difficult to explain. And of course, the digital workplace was already there in the 90s, but we didn't have, you know, the tools in the clouds. And so it is progressing more and more. But it is true that email already changed some things, but now it is changing even more and more. But what we should not forget is that we don't only have the digital workplace, we still have the physical workplace. And we should not forget also that physical contact is very important. Mm-hmm. So it's about the combination of the physical and the digital workplace that makes us strong.
When you think of Google and Facebook and some digital companies, you see that they do everything to keep their employees in the building.
Yeah.
Like you can do, you can eat there, have some sports in the gym or whatever, and you don't have to leave. Maybe you can even sleep there. So I think for teams and for collaboration, the physical workplace is still important. But the question is, how can we combine it with the digital workplace?
Yeah. Yes, just being said about being productive and collaborate, well, I have written the book about social technology, so I could not do my work without LinkedIn or Zoom or Facebook or Twitter. But this being said, you have to know that in the morning between 9 and 11, I never go on social media, I don't check my email, and I don't check my iPhone, because there I do the work that the knowledge worker is supposed to do. And it means reflecting, producing things, analyzing things, summarizing things. And that is something that I want to do on my own. And I want to do that in complete focus, so not in an open space. So I think that people also sometimes forget that we should not be connected all the time. That sometimes we have the right to deconnection and not being available in a very focused way. So between 9 and 11, I don't read my emails. There is no social media. And I do what I'm supposed to do. Then I really want to be a knowledge worker. Yeah. That's also very important.
Yes, and I think it's very dangerous to, because you can be online all the time, and a lot of us have their smartphone lying near the bed, or use it the first thing in the morning. And I have now I have three kids, and I always think about the question, how do I show them the right way to use technology, not to be addicted or be a slave, but to use it consciously. What would you recommend and tell kids how to use technology, how to use digital tools?
Yeah, my children are older than yours. So I have a son who is 19 years old, and then a daughter, she's 16. They use their mobile devices a lot, and at home there's just like two rules. So we don't use our mobile devices when we are eating together. But there is one exception: when they are desperately in love, they can text to the person they are in love with. It's a bit funny, but it's like that. In fact, that's one rule, and they accept the rule. And then there is a second rule, that they should not take their mobile devices when they go to sleep, but they never followed that rule. So there I was definitely a disaster as a mother. Yeah, okay. I'm on my mobile phone also a lot because I like reading, but my children also see that I read a lot of books also on paper. But they don't see me between 9 and 11 because then they are at school. But I also tell them that if they really want to study, they should do it on their own. And they say, yeah, but, you know, we have this Facebook group and we are interacting and we are asking questions to each other. And then I say, okay, that might be good for some period, but at another period, you really have to focus and go into that, you know, that study. So don't be connected all the time. It's not a good idea. It is very important to be able to focus without being distracted. And I think it's a skill that we can develop. It's about focus and discipline.
Speaking of learning and maybe inspiration, can you share any books or podcasts that inspired you?
Yeah. I have a pile of books here. In fact, I think for me, it started with this one. It's from Ewan Sempley. He's from the United Kingdom, and so the title is Organizations Don't Tweet, But People Do. It started all with this. And then, of course, you have the book written by John Stackel, Working Out Loud. But as I've written in my book, I think that the book Working Out Loud was not enough for me because it did not show me how to share my work online. And there I found a solution in the books written by Austin Kleon, How to Show Your Work. This is really a great one. Another one by Austin Kleon is this one, Steal Like an Artist, because you have a lot of practical examples. Then the idea of reflective practice, in fact, I got it from another great book written by Jane Bozart. It is also with the title Show Your Work, really great. Then another source of inspiration, I have a lot of them, is Superpowering People. It comes from Oscar Berg from Sweden. And then when we were talking about productivity, then of course my source of inspiration is Cole Newport, like deep work and deep focus. By the way, Cole Newport, he hates social technologies, but well, I think we can deal with it in another way. Another great book is the book Busy. And so Tony, he says that being busy has become like a status symbol, but it doesn't help us to really make an impact in the world. Yes. And then, of course, you have books about the power of communities. And there, I think Etienne Wenger is really an important person that people should follow. So these books are about sharing knowledge, and about being focused and productivity. I have a lot of them all, but I cannot show you all of them. Yeah.
Thank you very much. And maybe last question, Isabel. What motivates you? What drives you in the morning?
What drives me in the morning? I have this belief that by helping people how to share their knowledge online, that they will become happier persons because they are less fragile. Because they are surrounded by a community and they have become lifelong learners. That's one thing. And it's also my belief that by installing online communities within organizations, that these organizations will become healthier places to work, where people can raise their voice, where they can show their talents, and where they can be more efficient and more productive. And that is what keeps me working on this topic. I think it's a beautiful topic. It's about, as I said, about language, connecting, technology, self-leadership. Yeah. But it's not an easy one. It's not an easy one. Yeah. It's not an easy one because it's a huge change. But we will see what happens. Yeah.
So it's your purpose to help others find their purpose?
It's my purpose to help other people find their digital voice.
Okay.
And I know that while finding their digital voice, they will find it. It helps them to find their purpose.
Because a lot of us are doing what they are told to do in companies or in families. So now everybody has a voice in this new digital world, and It's a whole new situation for a lot of us. And the question is how can we deal with it? How can we use that to build careers and to set goals and follow goals, like John Stepper wrote in his book. And like Fridtjof Bergman, the founder of New Work, said, you have to do what you really, really want to do. But I think it's really hard for a lot of us to understand how technology can help us.
It's true. But that's also one of the reasons that I have developed this learning track Connect, Share, Lead, is because in John Stepper's book, it starts with finding your purpose and finding a goal, an objective. And I saw that a lot of my colleagues, they were stuck doing so. So that's why I start with sharing knowledge, learning about a topic, because then it's more clear. But then, of course, the ultimate goal is about finding your purpose. But you can start, by an easier point, by what is this knowledge that you are really passionate about. So for me, my focus in the first place is more on the knowledge sharing, sharing knowledge of other people, your own knowledge. But by doing so, it's in fact a great way to find your purpose, because you only want to write and to post about things that you really are passionate about. So I find this, intersection between language and knowledge sharing and finding your purpose.
Thank you.
Yeah. And also, sometimes, and that is the last thing that I'm going to say, because I could keep on talking for hours, is that in John Stepper's book, for me, the focus is a bit maybe too much on a personal goal. And so what I do in my learning track is that I ask people to find this topic that they want to learn more about, but it should be always related to the organizational objective. And then sometimes people, they find out that what they are passionate about is not an organizational goal. And then they find a reason why maybe they should quit. Another people say, yes, I have found this topic that I really like, and it fits with the organizational goal, and then they become even happier in their lives. But I think when talking about online communities, we should, and working in organizations, we should try to combine individual goals and organizational goals.
Thank you very much for this interview. Thank you for your book. I really liked it, and everybody should read it. A lot of us are working on this topic right now. I think a lot of the people who are watching this video later should read it. And thank you very much. Any last words?
Yes, I was looking for my book, but maybe it's somewhere over here in German, maybe. So this is the German version of the book, because you are German. And so the title is Vernetzt arbeiten. And I think that the German title is more beautiful than the English one. And I also like, you know, the quality of the paper. And so I hope that people, the German people who are looking at this video, that they want to order the Vernetzt arbeiten book. And then they will write down their notes in the margins, and that they will send me pictures. So this dialogue between the reader and the writer is really nice. So thank you for having me invited, Gabriel.
Thank you too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Und es war auch schon die vierte Ausgabe des New Work Chat. Ich hoffe, es hat euch gefallen. Schaut unbedingt mal vorbei auf newworkchat.de und natürlich auch auf meinem YouTube-Kanal. Da gibt es die Videos, natürlich auch das Video mit Isabel. Abonniert das gerne, abonniert diesen Podcast, bewertet diesen Podcast, und ich freue mich natürlich auch über jede Rezension und Bewertung. Ja, ich glaube, da können wir gemeinsam dafür sorgen, dass dieses Format noch weiter lebt und sich weiterentwickelt. Wenn ihr Vorschläge habt für Gäste, für Themen, schreibt mir gerne. Wenn ihr Feedback habt, natürlich auch jederzeit. Ansonsten wünsche ich euch erstmal alles Gute, bleibt gesund, bleibt connected. Viele Grüße aus Rostock an der Ostsee und bis zur nächsten Folge.